This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Today, the Senate continues its debate on a new immigration bill that would beef up security along the border and create new options for foreign workers, including those in the U.S. illegally. This debate has brought tens of thousands of protesters to the streets in support of more generous immigration policies. Curious to some is the absence of major African-American voices in the discussion. Some argue there is a natural alliance between African-Americans and Latinos, who are the largest minority groups in the U.S. Others wonder whether there is a natural competition for jobs and resources between two groups who tend to be poorer and less well-educated relative to the majority. And why is this so hard to talk about? Later in the program, we'll talk about immigration from a global perspective in our regular Monday feature, the Talk of the Nation opinion page, and we'll hear the voice of Booker T. Washington. His birthday is this week. But first, African Americans in the immigration debate. We want to hear from you. Do you believe that immigration helps or hurts African Americans? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. My first guest is Earl Afari Hutchinson, political analyst and author of numerous books about the African-American experience. He joins us from the studios of member stations KUSC in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program.
Well, my pleasure.
Mr. Hutchinson, you've written quite a lot about this issue, but one of the things that you've been critical of other African-American leaders for not really engaging in a discussion about immigration. First of all, why have you taken up this issue, and why do you think that other people have not?
Well, first of all, I'm a writer, and I always have an obligation as a writer to certainly hit, touch on, explore, analyze, assess all of those hot-button issues. I became aware over the last 6 months, going back to actually the middle of last year, that immigration was going to be the issue, illegal immigration. I also began hearing many things from many African Americans: fear, anxiety, fury, apprehension about illegal immigrants. I'm out here in Los Angeles, so as you know, it's a major issue anyway in this city, in this part of the country. But many African Americans were saying they're taking jobs away. They're running down services. We've had so many problems in the jails and the prisons with violence between blacks and Latinos. Also, the quality of life is changing. But even more important in many ways, I heard many African Americans say, we haven't seen any real outreach from Latino leaders, whether it be elected officials, business leaders, our civic leaders, to African Americans to get us involved in the immigrant rights movement. So many were saying, it's not our fight. So my series essentially focused on what not only many African Americans were saying, but also the civil rights leadership, too. By that I mean mainstream civil rights leaders, NAACP, SCLC, Urban League, what their positions were. So it was really trying to bring together a confluence of ideas and opinions about illegal immigration.
Where do you come down in the end, or have you, on whether immigration specifically affects African Americans, and how?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think in Los Angeles, undeniably, if you're a young African American male and you're looking for a job, certainly you have lower marginal skills, maybe very limited education, and perhaps even a criminal record. It's going to be very difficult for you to find a job at the low end in terms of manufacturing, car washes, restaurants, other retail establishments. Many of those jobs are gone. However, if you're living in other cities, for example, Detroit, Atlanta, you can still find those jobs. So what I'm suggesting is, in employment and jobs, as you know, has probably been the sorest point issue of all in the great debate. It's a mixed bag. It is impacting in some areas undeniably, adversely. In other areas, it hasn't touched so far. Also, the black middle class, too, business and professional people, at this point in time, it hasn't reached them. But what I'm suggesting is, with the march of time, it's also going to have an economic impact in those areas, too.
Let's bring in a caller. Here is Lynette in Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hello, Lynette.
How are you doing today?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Okay, my comment is that it's unbelievable to me that America has let this get to level of these illegal immigrants competing for jobs that African Americans could actually take. And my opinion is that in an economic sense, they're keeping wages low. Hello?
Yes, we're listening. And, you're saying in an economic sense that wages are being depressed.
And another thing I would like to say is the illegal people are breaking the law. Can you imagine African Americans coming here illegally and being treated so leniently, you know, without the law coming down on them?
That's certainly a point of view, Lynette. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Mr. Hutchinson, what about their point? It would seem intuitively obvious that large-scale illegal immigration would depress wages at the lower end for folks who are less well-educated and perhaps less skilled. I mean, if you just look at the numbers, the commonly used figure is about 11 million people is the number that's commonly cited as the amount of illegal immigration or the number of immigrants without proper documentation in the country currently. And there are only 33 million African Americans, of whom about two-thirds are middle class. So you'd figure that perhaps a third of that number, 10 million or so, are in direct competition with the same group of folks. It would seem intuitively obvious that wages would be depressed because whatever you have more of, you can get for less. Why would that be in the interest
the
of African Americans to champion?
Right. Well, but on the other side, the argument against that is that's true. In some areas, wages are depressed. For example, manufacturing and all the service and retail industries at the low end of the economic scale. But the counterargument is these jobs aren't going to be taken anyway by African Americans. They've long since abandoned those areas. I know, for example, the car wash. Let's use that as an example. When I was 16, it was an entry-level job for me in high school and many other young African Americans. I know in Los Angeles, I can't speak for other parts of the country, but my suspicion is the same rules apply. Those jobs are gone now. They are being taken by illegal immigrants. So once again, it's undeniable that a segment of the workforce, the job market, has not only been affected by wages, the depression of wages, but just simply there are no jobs there. One other thing, too, the caller brought up a point about the double standard. She suggested there's a double standard in treatment. If, in fact, African Americans broke the law, the full force of state power would come down on them. Police, you name it, incarceration, the criminal justice system would kick
in. Do you think that's true?
I think there is, I wouldn't say it's true, but I would say this, the perception on the part of so many African Americans is that it's true. Let me give one example where there's a good argument for that. I'm out here in Los Angeles again, and as you know, there was a huge wave of student protests, young people leaving the high school and beyond campuses, hitting the streets with illegal marches and protests. I have to say this. I observed many of those marches, and I did see a kid glove treatment on the part of not only city officials, the Los Angeles Unified School District, and the police and sheriffs. I had to think to myself, if these had been African American students, you'd have the riot squad out there. They would have been pictured as hoodlums and thugs, and all the stereotypes would have kicked in. So I think in that sense, it wasn't just perception, it was reality.
I do want to bring in another voice here, but you have also written in your columns that you believe there is an alliance between African Americans and Latinos that should be discussed. But there's an element of human compassion and natural empathy from people who understand what it's like to be unsafe in your home country. For people who understand what it's like to seek and feel the need to seek opportunity elsewhere from the place that one's born.
And I think based on that alone, I think there has to be some human consideration, some human understanding, some human empathy toward individuals that are coming here. I know the argument. They're not coming here legally. They're not playing by the rules. They're not following legal protocol. But when you look at some of the countries and the conditions there, Mexico, Central America, certainly Ethiopia, a lot of other parts of the world. These are areas that have been essentially just taken out of the pale in terms of the economy. There are no jobs. They're rife with civil strife and war. So people are, in fact, the natural progression coming to a prosperous industrial nation like the United States seeking a better life. On the other hand, having said that, there's still the argument. They're here illegally. They didn't play by the rules, and that, as you well know, has engendered a lot of fury among across the whole political and economic and social spectrum, and not just among African Americans.
Okay, hold on a second there, Mr. Hutchinson. I want to bring in Mark Krikorian. He's here with me in Studio 3A. He's the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Welcome.
Thanks.
Or welcome back, I should say. What is your view on the question of how immigration affects native-born African Americans?
There's really no question that this is a serious problem for black Americans. And in fact, every black leader from Frederick Douglass through A. Philip Randolph in the 60s emphasized the problems that immigration causes, the threat that immigration poses to black Americans, despite political differences. Booker T. Washington and W.B. Du Bois, for instance, they disagreed on everything except on the impact that immigration had on black Americans. And we can even see that in World War I, when immigration from Europe was interrupted, that was when black Americans for the first time were drawn into the modern industrial economy because it was the only labor available.
If that's the case now, and it continues to be the case, why are we hearing so little of this from African American leaders now, briefly?
I suspect the reason is that immigration has now come to be seen in a civil rights context, that Latin immigrants in particular are seen as another minority that is sort of an ally, when in fact most Hispanic Americans identify themselves as white, and even the ones that don't can become white once they, you know, become middle class and educated. There really is no social barrier like there is for blacks. And so really what this is the black elite has kind of been duped. And really what Latin immigrants represent is simply the latest immigrant group entering the United States and bypassing black Americans.
You've said, and again, we really do have to take a break briefly, but you have said in the past that immigrants culturally remind us of what is best about America, but in some ways African Americans remind us of what is most shameful about America, which is slavery, and that creates kind of a cultural tension. I think we should talk about that when we come back. We're talking about African Americans and the debate over immigration. We'll have more after the break and more of your calls. Our number is 1-800-989-TALK. I'm Michelle Martin. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking about African Americans and immigration. Our guests are author and political analyst Earl Afari Hutchinson and Mark Krikorian. He's the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And before the break, Mark Krikorian, you were saying that, in fact, you've told me in the past that you believe that immigrants remind us of kind of a cultural ideal of an open country, a country with welcoming arms that offers opportunity to everybody, and that there's kind of an undertone of shame attached to African Americans of the legacy of slavery, and that that affects our relationships with each other.
Sure it does. I mean, in a sense, when you hear the talk about, you know, immigration as representing America as the country of a second chance and the country of opportunity, and, you know, I mean, I'm a patriot, don't get me wrong here, but it does, in fact, the undertone there clearly is saying to black Americans, what the heck's wrong with you? I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
But why would black elites buy into that?
That's my point about the civil rights paradigm. Immigration is now viewed through a kind of racial prism where immigration is seen as a way of making America less white. That's pretty explicitly really what it's about, and or at least the way it's viewed by much of the black elite. And so there's a real reluctance to criticize immigration, even in a constructive way. In other words, not in bad-mouthing immigrants, because Booker T. Washington actually was really good about this. Unlike W.B. Du Bois, who was much more scathing, really almost sort of racially, about immigrants from Europe, Booker T. Washington's point was, you know, these people are hardworking folks. We actually be able to learn something from them. Nonetheless, industrialists and employers in the United States ought to be looking to us first. That was his cast down your bucket where you are speech, was specifically about immigration. That was sort of the whole point of it.
Why should they be, though, looking to native-born blacks first?
Because the question is, do we as Americans have a greater obligation to our fellow countrymen or not? I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And especially on the right, there is a sense, and I say this personally as a conservative, there is a sense that on libertarians in particular, that they have no greater obligation to black Americans or to any Americans in general than they have to anyone else. And I'd have to say that regardless of your political persuasion, we as Americans have inherited a responsibility to deal with this important, this sort of most serious element of our history. And you can talk about how to deal with it in different ways. Maybe affirmative action is a good idea or not. I don't know. But the point is that that responsibility remains there. And if you reject that responsibility, then you end up with a, you know, every man for himself and the devil take the hindmost point of view. And that means that we'll sort of, you know, sort of house blacks in ghettos and give them their welfare checks, and to heck with them, we'll import the Mexicans to do the work. I mean, that's really sort of what, I mean, the kind of worldview that drives a lot of the immigration debate. That's when people talk about reviving failed neighborhoods. You know, the immigrants come here and inject vitality. What that means is, you know, let's get the black people out of here and bring in the Mexicans and the Chinese because we like them better. And even among Republicans, there's this sense, this is what the president's outreach to Hispanic voters really is about. Democrats have their minority. Let's import our own minority.
Earl Hutchinson, do you agree with that?
I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I would also add something else, too. There is a sense that we have been here as America's oldest native sons and daughters. There is a special obligation. There is a special duty. There is a special consideration that government, business, and certainly the whole economic establishment and political establishment must certainly pay toward African Americans. Let's face it, we are citizens, we're old generation, many of us have moved up the ladder, but many more of us haven't, stuck at the bottom. So as a result of that, with the new pressures from illegal immigrants and illegal immigration, it's putting so many demands not only on the infrastructure in poor, underserved African-American communities, certainly downward when I say putting pressure on, but also the leadership, the mainstream civil rights leadership, they have to tread lightly too, because it's really a dichotomy. On the one hand, they must be politically correct in the sense of reaching out to poor, quote-unquote, people of color, immigrants from another country seeking a better life. That is the politically correct and also, I think, morally correct thing, at least to look at on the surface. But on the other hand, they're also hearing loudly, increasingly loudly, from so many African Americans that, look, they, in fact, are a problem in our community and our lives. So rightly or wrongly, the mainstream African-American leadership, they're reacting to that. So they're really caught in between the devil and the deep blue sea.
They're caught
in the middle.
Let's take another caller. Let's go to Philadelphia. And Pete. Pete, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
First, I would like to say that I just heard your guest say an obligation to people that are here. I'm a business owner. I'm a contractor. The first obligation I have is not to go bankrupt and to find the best worker that I possibly can, regardless of who they are, what skin color, or what their background is. Now, I hire mostly illegal immigrants from Mexico. That's the majority of my people that are working for me.
In Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, that is correct. We have a huge Mexican population here.
And why do you do that?
The town that I live in.
And you do that because?
Because they're better workers. Bottom line, they work their tails off. And I won't get slapped with a racial discrimination lawsuit like I have in the past if somebody takes something I say the wrong way, or if I have to let somebody go because, you know what, they're just not good enough.
Is that...
And it's across the board. I mean, there are certain things that some people don't want to hear, and that's the truth. It's not across... It's not everybody. Don't let me say, you know, don't take me the wrong way. But I was in the restaurant business for 30 years, and it's the same thing.
Hold on, Pete.
Illegal immigrants because they work harder. Our bottom line is our bottom line.
Hold on a second, Pete. Why don't you stay here with us? Because Harry Holzer is also with us. He's professor and associate dean of public policy at Georgetown University, as well as visiting fellow at the Urban Institute. Harry, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Michelle.
And I also want to say you've been publishing and talking recently, including on this program, about the dire circumstances of many young African-American men. What about what this caller has to say?
Well, I think what the caller's expressing is a widely held point of view, at least in some sectors of the economy, that employers feel that there's two reasons they might prefer immigrants over native-born folks. One reason is that if they're illegal, they can afford to pay them lower wages. And as soon as these people become legal, that luxury would disappear. But the other thing that the caller said is a widely held perception that immigrants, whether legal or illegal, have stronger work ethic. And this is not a racial statement. This is a statement that people come here from very, very poor countries, and they are anxious to succeed, and they're happy for the opportunity. And when they get here, they work very, very hard for whatever wages they paid, and employers perceive that. And it's interesting because I've heard employers say, well, but their kids are like everybody else. And then once they've been here, they have the same attributes. But that first generation of immigrants really, really cranks it out. So I know at least in some sectors of the economy, employers feel that way. And they feel that if they had to pay the higher wages or deal with other labor, their problems would go up. But the other thing to keep in mind, and I would want to challenge some of the comments I've heard from the other guests today, is this broader question of is immigration really responsible for much of the problem of African Americans and sort of broader labor market problems?
We're going to get to that point, Harry. Hold on a second, if you wouldn't, but I just want to sort of tie a bow on our conversation with Pete here. Pete, what about Harry Holzer's point is that when immigrants get to the point where they feel they have more standing, that part of the reason that the, forgive me for using this word, I don't mean to be offensive, but as compliant as you find them to be, is that they have no rights. Is that part of it?
That's not true. They just have a better work ethic. You know, like I said, I was in the restaurant business for 30 years, and I'm a product of a legal immigrant. Back in the 60s, my parents came here. And again, they worked their tails off because they had the opportunity to. And what I find to be true, again, maybe not across the board for every black American, is that they think, certain black Americans think that the world owes them something. That's been my experience in all of my businesses and all of the restaurants that I've owned and worked in.
Okay, Pete, thank you so much for calling, and thank you for being candid about your point of view on
this. Thank you so much.
Harry Holzer, they say if you want five opinions, ask four economists. So how expand on the point you were making earlier, which is how do you think immigration, especially illegal immigration, is affecting the lives of African Americans, especially the less well-educated?
There's basically two sets of studies here, and one set of studies, which compares across different areas in the way that Mr. Hutchinson was doing, comparing to LA to other areas. Those studies find no, zero negative effect. They find that black Americans do worst in cities like Detroit and Cleveland and Pittsburgh, the old industrial belt, where jobs have disappeared in much greater number, rather than in L.A. and parts of Texas and in the other big immigrant gateways. Now, there's another set of studies that use a different statistical methodology that does find some negative effect. And I think my guess is that the truth is really somewhere in between. Even that second set of studies finds very small effects for most groups, somewhat larger for high school dropouts. But you're talking about effects that are for even for high school
what
dropouts.
What do you mean by small?
In one
because
set of studies,
unemployment. I mean, if it's you, the one who's unemployed, I think the effect is not.
No,
small.
That's true. But overall,
and I'm not being trivial.
I think you're right. You're right to ask the question. In the largest effects that you find overall on American workers are a negative effect of, say, 3% of all immigration, both legal and illegal. Remember, the illegal part of that's only a piece. On high school dropouts, the biggest negative effect is I've seen that immigration might have caused an 8% decline in the earnings of high school dropouts over the last 20 to 25 years. Again, I think that number for a lot of reasons is on the high end. So probably the truth, maybe it reduces earnings by 4-5% for high school dropouts overall. And again, only part of that negative effect is caused by illegal. Some of it is due to legal immigration of people without high school diplomas. So, you know, I think the effect ranges from zero to small, even for the high school dropouts. The young African-American men that I worry about have many, many problems, of which this is just one.
Let's bring in another caller. Let's go to Philadelphia again. And Melvin, what's on your mind?
Yes, good afternoon. Dr. Hutchinson, it's an honor to speak with you. However, I really have to disagree with you. I have not seen any outreach in terms of Hispanics, particularly from Mexico, and you know as well as I do that Mexicans of African descent are at the bottom of the totem pole in Mexico and made fun of and characterized in terms of all types of things. I have not seen it. I have not. Every time, and I was home because I had an operation, every time I saw on C-SPAN that there was a meeting of Mexicans talking about this issue, the only people sitting there other than Mexicans were white people. I have not seen them one word in a positive sense. I've heard all kind of derogatory statements coming from them about black people, but I have not heard anything in a positive sense of talking about forming an alliance, and now they have the audacity to talk about that they are the new civil rights movement.
Earl Hutchinson, what do you make of that?
First of all, there's some clarifications. There's some clarifications here. Let me deal with Mr. Holder first. I think what was said before was not that illegal immigrants are taking all of these jobs away from blacks or that they are adversely to the point where they've created all the problems in underserved black communities of jobs, schools, housing, and so forth. I think what's being said is there's a perception that illegal immigration has caused so many problems. And again, we need to be very careful on this. The perception among so many African Americans, and as I prefaced it before, rightly or wrongly, we certainly know if you're talking about young black males, we know the high incarceration rate, drugs, gangs, violence, a disease, lack of skills, lack of quality education, lack of outreach, parenting support, all these things go into the mix in terms of why you have high unemployment. So I think we need to put that in perspective. Now, as
Hold
far
on
as
a
the
second.
outreach
Hold
goes,
on a second, Earl Hutchinson. I just want to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
All right. Now, as far as the caller from Philadelphia mentioned about the lack of outreach from Latino elected officials, certainly immigrant rights groups, civic or religious leaders, community activists, the point that was made, and I made it, was many African Americans don't see that outreach there. Not that outreaches aren't being made, because I have to tell you, in some places, immigrant rights groups, and I know this for a fact in L.A., are in fact actively working with some local African-American religious leaders to try to bridge that ethnic divide. So it's not a uniform, one-on-one, all-encompassing, lose-lose situation. It depends on time, place, and circumstance.
Well, I don't think that Harry Holzer was saying that there has been no outreach, nor do I think that, well, the caller was dealing with his perception. And this is what's interesting about this discussion is that we're trying to sort of get to some hard facts. And what I think I hear all of you saying is that perception is almost as meaningful as the hard facts. Like Harry Holzer, some of the work that you've done speaks to employer preferences. And the earlier caller saying that he believes that immigrants are simply harder working than native-born African-Americans are. Is that a widespread perception?
I think that's a perception that you hear in the really bottom-end jobs in our economy. If you're talking about employers who are hiring in construction and restaurants and garments in sectors like that, where they're offering very, very low wages, maybe for good competitive reasons, and they're expecting very hard workers for very low wages, yes, if that's what you want, you're much more likely to find that in the immigrant community. You know, native-born folks of every race, gender, ethnic background, if they're born here, they have a higher set of expectations, and probably rightfully so.
Mark Krikorian, is there, you've highlighted that there's a reluctance on the part of African-American leaders to engage on this question, to highlight the economic self-interest of African-Americans, particularly those who are less well-educated. This is a question for both you and for Earl, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you both to be brief. What does one do when human compassion collides with economic self-interest?
Well,
how is the right way to address this from the standpoint of the African-American community?
This happens every day in all kinds of areas. So the question is, as grown-ups, we need to decide where the dividing line is. And in this sense, I think the compassion clearly requires us to deal with immigrants humanely. In other words, that treating immigrants with cruelty or in sort of improper, illegal ways is wrong. But our immigration policy is a different issue. In other words, what I was talking about is immigrant policy. Immigration policy is how many people do we take, how do we pick them, how do we enforce the law. And I think there's no contest there. Barbara Jordan herself, who was chairman of the Immigration Reform Commission, said unequivocally that immigration should not import any unskilled workers, at least because of their work skills, as opposed to people who marry Americans or what have you. In other words, no one should be imported who is an unskilled worker for his own sake because of what it does to low-skilled workers. There's no excuse for any of it.
Earl Hutchinson, you have exactly 30 seconds to tell me how do you reconcile
yeah,
this question
even
when
do
human
it in
compassion
less,
collides
less time
with
than
self-interest?
That, Michelle, I can do it in less time than that. Very simply, I think we need a humane, balanced immigration reform law. I think we need to protect civil rights and civil liberties of those workers that are in the borders, within the borders of the United States. And also we need to expand government, local government, national government, private industry, expand opportunities for all workers, especially the urban poor that want jobs.
I want to thank our guests, Earl Afari Hutchinson, political analyst and author of numerous books about the African-American experience. He joined us from the studios of member station KUSC in Los Angeles. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, and Harry Holzer, professor and associate dean of public policy at Georgetown University. They both joined me here in Studio 3A. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you, Michelle.